When it comes to the plant-based eating debate, there's more to consider than just healthy or unhealthy. Of course, we want to eat things that make us feel good and generate energy to keep us going, but there's also a major environmental component that drives a lot of people to a plant-focused diet. But you don't have to give up some of your faves entirely. Impossible Foods makes meat from plants. They're solving the meat problem with more meat. By creating delicious meat from plants that's better for you and the planet, Impossible lets you enjoy some of your favorite meaty products with a plant-based twist. Ground beef, homestyle meatballs, sausage patties, all made from plants. And that's just a few of their delicious and versatile options. No more tension between craving meat but not wanting to eat so much of it, or sacrificing your carnivorous faves for your health. Indulge in nutrient-packed, plant-based goodness and feel good doing it. Check out impossiblefoods.com to see how you can help solve the meat problem with more meat. That's impossiblefoods.com.
Welcome back to another episode of Ask Men Anything. It's me, your host, your buddy, your pal, Emma Willman. Thank you so much for being here. I appreciate you. I appreciate your time. And ooh, I am excited for today's episode. Now, before we get into it, I just want to tell you a couple dates that I have coming up. Show dates, obviously. I'm going to be in Albany April 12th and 13th. I'm going to be in Ohio, Perrysburg, Ohio, April 19th and 20th. Cleveland, the state, just got added April 21st. And then on May 2nd through 4th, I will be in San Francisco. My mother is coming with me to those shows. We've got a bunch of family in San Francisco. So like 8 months ago, I was like, hey, do you want to come with me to San Francisco when I'm doing these shows? We can catch up with people. She was like, all right. And now she's asked me maybe, I want to say 700 times, when are we going to San Francisco? Where are we staying? What's happening? Do you have to do shows out there? Oh, how many shows? So it's going to be a shit show. But anyway, the shows are going to be fun. That's May 2nd through 4th. And then, oh boy, I'm doing Netflix as a Joke, May 7th at the Improv in Los Angeles, 7 p.m. I'm doing a very small room. It's going to be an intimate show. It's going to be fun. And I got another whole slew of dates. I am Emma Willman.com. Also, I'll be in Somerville, Massachusetts, May 1st. I did that show May 1st in Somerville 1. I love Somerville, Massachusetts, like the venue. Also, then I can fly with my mom from Somerville, Massachusetts to San Francisco together. So if we make that flight, we'll make all the rest of the shows. And I don't mean make the flight, like actually get on the flight. I mean like make it and not like get in some big argument or something. Okay, now you know my entire schedule. Way too much backstory. Now, oh my God, you are not going to believe who we talked to today. You might already know because of the title of the episode, but we talked to teen heartthrob Jesse McCartney. What a surreal moment, because I remember my friend Margot had what could only be described as a shrine to this man in her bedroom when we were like, I remember like must have been like ninth grade, eighth grade. And I just remember seeing his face just plastered everywhere. So it's real. And that was like in really rural Maine. So it's so interesting the places that we end up. Like, who would have thought that, you know, a couple years later, I'd be talking to him in person. We talk about what it was like being a regular teenager, then becoming a famous teenager, how it affected his interpersonal relationships, what it was like dating under that lens of being a teen heartthrob, where he's putting his energy now, pottery, him and I are both into it, BFFs now, what it's like writing songs from a female perspective, and get this, he didn't know what a Finsta was. So I was talking about a fake Instagram account and he was like, what's that? And I was like, what? And then I had to explain my my fake Instagram accounts to him. And he was like, truly, and I seriously believe him. He was like, oh, I haven't really had the time to do that, which is the fair, healthy thing to say. Meanwhile, I'm over here with like 50 accounts on my phone. Like, oh yeah, me neither. Ugh. But we get into a whole bunch of stuff and he's on tour right now. It's a short tour, 6 weeks. His new EP, All's Well, is out now. I can't wait to listen to it. Go see him on tour if you can. Here's the episode. Thank you so much for being here. Thanks for doing the show.
Thanks, Emma. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. Hanging in there. I was just thinking about Teen Beat magazines, and I remember seeing your little face at the grocery store with my parents. And then I remember cutting out a picture of it with my friend Margot, who I think had some, what you would only call a shrine, I guess.
Yeah. It's funny. It's so specific. I mean, I don't really know. I mean, I grew up having like, you know, flipping through some of those magazines, having, you know, crushes on Britney Spears and like Christina Aguilera, but I never physically pinned stuff to walls. I feel like it was like, I felt like that was a young, like, pubescent teenage girl thing. Maybe some guys did it too, but I never did it. But it seems like a lot of girls did do that.
It does seem like, yeah, with guys, it's more like they would be like hiding the magazines that they're looking at. Like, yeah, they're like,
My magazines were under the bed.
Yeah. And then the girls' ones are all over the place, because it would be these like really intense, like plaques almost of just like the faces like everywhere.
Yeah.
And I remember it's got to be, what a trip to think to, like, of all the places that like your face has been too. Like the energy of your face, like in so many, because I'm from like the backwoods of Maine. So your face was in, I'm sure, so many bedrooms, but definitely my friend Margot's wall in rural Maine for like years of her life.
Well, shout out to Margot.
Shout out to Margot, yeah. But it's good to it's great to meet you in person. Besides,
you too.
Just seeing your face, you know, right? I can picture it so well, like right near her bed where she would like put her makeup on.
Oh yeah,
yep. She's like blowing at kisses and stuff. But
well, it's nice to meet you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Now we've got questions about masculinity, how it's changed, how it relates to you as an individual. Mm-hmm. But in the beginning, we like to just get some type of like a context of your views on masculinity for yourself. So the very first question is, how would you say the concept of masculinity in general changed from when you were a kid to now?
Oh boy.
And you've obviously had a very unique experience with it, because you're being in entertainment. And do you feel that the standards for young male artists today is different from how they were when you were starting out?
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, I feel like, you know, I feel like the pressures in some way were like, you know, the things that people got away with doing and sort of treating young people in general were more acceptable back then.
Sure.
Whereas now, now I feel like there's just a lot more people watching, you know, the grownups and what they're doing, you know, what they're doing. But I there's no question when I was a child, like when I was a kid, there were moments where I just felt, overworked, overlooked, and certainly like no one was really listening. And I feel like now, like, there is a general sense of understanding, and children are heard more. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't really know if it affected me differently because I was a young boy versus a young girl, but, you know, I was so in it. At the time I was like 15, 16 when I was signed, and everything was happening so fast that I didn't really stop to think about it much, to be honest with you. You know, in hindsight, I think probably back then, and I don't know that it's any different now, I think girls were probably sexualized a little bit more than us boys. We weren't expected to sort of do certain things in front of the camera that I think, you know, when you look back at like Britney Spears or Christina, and like, it's crazy what some of them were doing at the age, like the tender age of 15, 16, and it was just sort of socially acceptable. And now I feel like there's a lot more, there's a lot more red tape, and it's hyper, you know, it's criticized a lot more. But I don't know that I felt it as much as a boy.
It's crazy when you're in something too, because you just don't have, how are you going to have the perspective on it? It was like happening. And I've like had selective memory of even thinking about how crazy some of this stuff was. Like, did you watch the Pamela Anderson documentary?
No.
It's insane. The question, like every interview she does, they're like, are your boobs real? Are your boobs real? Are your boobs real? And just stuff that you would never, like, I'm like, I don't even, it's just so wild that that was stuff that people were just like, that was like late night primetime TV. They're like, so before we get into it, are your boobs real? And she's like, let's talk about something else. And they're like, but first.
Yeah.
So just like the types of questions that people would get asked then too on those like just mainstream platforms, or asking, like, I remember they must have asking Britney Spears about her like dating, romantic life.
Yep.
You know, were you scared to even have a girlfriend too, for if you like came out in an interview and were like, actually, I am seeing somebody?
No, I wasn't. I mean, to be honest with you, I wasn't even, I mean, I dated a girl when I was 18. I think it was like my first real girlfriend, you know, but prior to that, I was just so busy. I wasn't thinking about having a full time, you know, a relationship per se. But I think, I don't think people were, I'm trying to remember. To be honest with you, it was so long ago. It's 20 years ago. But
right.
I started dating a girl, and I guess it was, you know, things back then were just like you were behind the curtain and you would step out in front of the curtain to perform and then you'd go back to your sort of secret private world.
Right.
And I guess in some regard, like I would sort of protect that relationship and not do anything, you know, to sort of jeopardize like the young fans who thought like I should be single forever.
You're my boyfriend.
But also like there was, now I feel like it's totally changed. Like now if you were an 18-year-old singer and you know, you're like on TikTok with your girlfriend
sure.
and sharing everything. Just the dynamics have changed so much because of social media. But yeah, I don't feel like I had to like protect that much, but I'm trying to think of like a scenario where, you know, I was asked questions, like, you know, like a Pam Anderson question.
Oh, sure.
You know, I'm sure there are some, and I'm sure, you know, I mean, they always wanted to ask about sort of like certain things that you were into about girls, you know, or like certain things that just felt a little like uncomfortable. but certainly, I mean, I saw that Britney interview where they were asking her about, they asked something about her body, and then you realize like that girl is 15 years old.
Yeah, and they always used to ask her if she was a virgin too.
Is that what
Remember
it was?
That? They used to always ask about that.
Yeah.
What would you say is your most feminine trait that you like about yourself?
Oh man, I don't know. I would say probably my, you know, angelic falsetto voice.
That is, it is an angelic falsetto voice. I think singing is like the scariest form of self-expression.
Singing?
I used to go to the office all the time because I went to this little Waldorf school and we would have to sing. Like
uh-huh.
That was like, we would do all school assemblies and everyone would have to sing and I wouldn't sing. I would just mouth the words.
Uh-huh.
They'd be like, Em, if you're not going to sing, like you have to go to the office, and I'd go to the office.
Oh,
I'd be
no.
so it scared. And at karaoke, I did it one time hammered.
Hammered?
I was so drunk. I don't drink anymore. I was so drunk.
Not in school.
No,
oh, okay.
No.
Wait,
no.
We're singing karaoke yeah. hammered in school. Where did you go?
Wasted. This was in Boston and it was after a comedy show and I just got wasted and I did like 311. I really try to not remember it, but I really think singing is the scariest thing.
I mean, I guess, you know, for me, drawing is really scary, or
really?
Like doing other mediums in the art world. You know, I mean, I guess if you're not a non-singer, it would be super, or someone who's not comfortable singing, it would be scary. For me, it's like my happy, it's like my comfort zone.
You feel free.
Yeah, it's like, because it's just like come, it, you know, but like if I had to, you know, do photography or pottery, I'd probably,
pottery.
You know.
I was saw an interview, we were talking about taking up pottery.
I just started
pottery.
Actually about a
yeah.
month ago. It's
so
really
therapeutic.
Fun. I love it.
I
love it.
You can just tune out and then like you're making this stuff. You feel like, I love doing pottery, painting.
Best.
I like painting. Bowling recently I've been getting into.
Are you a bowler?
I fucking suck at it though.
Oh man.
I'm so bad. Kids
My
were
wife
smoking
and I go
me.
Bowling and we get super competitive.
It's
and
fun.
It's so fun. And then after the next day we wake up and our arms are falling off because
right.
we've been bowling three games.
Everyone's like, what'd you guys get into last night? And we're like, bowling. Like it was a lot. Like my body hurts.
Yeah. We went hard in the bowling.
Yep. And I just am so bad at it. I think I'm going to take lessons though secretly and then pop up and like kill it and then not tell anyone I'm taking the lessons and then like reemerge as like a bowling superstar.
And then just show up like the Big Lebowski, like the dude just absolutely crushing it in the lanes.
And then like, yeah, doing like moves, like just tossing the ball up and smoking everyone. I'm busy on the go and don't always have time to go to the grocery store and pick out what I'm going to eat for the week. Thankfully, I found ButcherBox. They take the guesswork out of shopping and cooking with a great selection of fish, chicken, beef, and more. And their cuts of meat are always way better than anything I would find in the grocery store. I love their chicken thighs. Best chicken thighs I've ever had. I swear on my mom. With ButcherBox, you can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. I can get 100% grass-fed, beef, free-range, organic chicken, and wild-caught seafood delivered straight to my doorstep. I don't even have to mess with going to the store. Plus, they have free shipping always. And because this is really important to me, with ButcherBox, all the meat is humanely raised. That means no antibiotics or added hormones. You can curate and customize what you want in each box, and if you're feeling uninspired in the kitchen, they have an entire catalog of delicious recipes to get you started. All I have to think about is what I'm going to binge binge watch on TV while I enjoyed ButcherBox's high quality cuts. Sign up at ButcherBox.com/AMA and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional $20 off. Choose salmon, chicken breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at ButcherBox.com/AMA and use code AMA to choose your free for a year offer. Plus, get $20 off your first order.
When it comes to the plant-based eating debate, there's more to consider than just healthy or unhealthy. Of course, we want to eat things that make us feel good and generate energy to keep us going, but there's also a major environmental component that drives a lot of people to a plant-focused diet. But you don't have to give up some of your faves entirely. Impossible Foods makes meat from plants. They're solving the meat problem with more meat. By creating delicious meat from plants that's better for you and the planet, Impossible lets you enjoy some of your favorite meaty products with a plant-based twist. Ground beef, homestyle meatballs, sausage patties, all made from plants. And that's just a few of their delicious and versatile options. No more tension between craving meat but not wanting to eat so much of it, or sacrificing your carnivorous faves for your health. Indulge in nutrient-packed, plant-based goodness and feel good doing it. Check out ImpossibleFoods.com to see how you can help solve the meat problem with more meat. That's ImpossibleFoods.com.
Now we have a listener email. Dear Emma and Man, today's man is Jesse McCartney. Check him out on tour, and his new EP, All's Well, is out now. This is a listener email. Thank you guys so much for writing in. Please send in your questions to AMA@betches.com. Here's the question. I cut things off with my situationship a month ago and just deleted him on social media. Even though I can't get him out of my head, I know I did the right thing because I wasn't a priority in his life and he was making no effort to change. What do men think when they get cut off? Does it trigger any emotions or potential regret? Does going no contact work to show what they missed out on? Thanks for everything, overthinking bitch.
I guess it really depends on the circumstances. I mean, I don't know the background, what happened there, but so I get the idea is she just completely cut him out.
Cut him off. So how does it feel when basically someone goes, when they get cut off, does it trigger emotions or potential regret? Which I'm guessing... we always want a motherfucker to have regret.
Sure. I mean, of course. You know, I think no one likes to be broken up with, especially in that way, so sort of abruptly. And, you know, I don't know. I feel like it's hard to know without the circumstances, but certainly I think anytime someone is broken up with, there's an emotional reaction. You know, I don't know whether it's good or bad.
It's even though I can't get him out of my head, I know I did the right thing because I wasn't a priority in his life and he was making no effort to change.
Oh, well, if you're not a priority, then obviously, and that's not something, you know, and you want to be number one in his life, then let's move on. And there's somebody else that's better that's out there for you.
There's always some, it's so crazy. Like I've had it and I've had friends have had it where they're like, I just don't know if I'm going to find someone else. And then the second you actually close up the thing that wasn't right, someone else, maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, maybe not in the timeline you think it should be, or I think it should be, but then someone will appear and it's like, they're for sure not going to appear if you're in something just to be in something too. But that's like just staying in something to stay in it. It can be so scary to get out of it, but then another will emerge.
Yeah, and relationships, you know, they're work. And if if you don't want to change, if he's not trying to come to the table and change on the things that you want him to work on, then that's not a good partner, you know?
Yes.
Like all the time I'm trying to like work on myself so that I can be a better partner to my wife, and she does the same. And it's a sort of like a back and forth, and you have to sort of concede certain things that you may not necessarily want to for the better of the relationship.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's going to be work, even if it's the best one ever.
Yeah.
That no matter what, there's going to be things that my girlfriend's going to get annoyed about, but it's like, it's the work that I want to be doing because, you know, you're in love.
That's it.
I know that feeling of always like wanting someone to feel like regret and like they missed out. It's addictive. Not feeding into it will always feel better because it's like once you close the door, let it go, turn it over, surrender. They're lost. We can't mind read. We don't know what he's thinking. So he could be pining over you every day or not. But once he's gone, you know, he's done. Skeet, skeet, bye. But I know that when you want so much to be like, oh, I just want to run into the person and they're like, oh my God, you look better than ever. You're doing better than ever. Like I fucked up. But if we wait for that, we might never get that. So maybe just picture that he's doing that right now, but it doesn't matter if he is or he isn't. Hopefully he's getting potential regret, sure, but it ultimately doesn't matter because you're moving on. It's a sign of mental health, actually, getting over things, like moving on from things. I'm not saying that I'm like, you know, nailing that mental health department, but I was reading recently that I think it's like called like neuroplasticity or something like that. It's it helps like your ability to like not like dwell in it is like a sign of, so it's a good opportunity to practice mental health. And thank you for writing in about that. And I wish you all the best and good job blocking them. Don't go make a fake account and scroll around too. It's never good. I've done that a million times. Never makes you feel
better. Wait, how does that work?
Oh man, you never made a fake account?
No.
Really?
No.
Either you've made a ton of them and you're really good at pretending you haven't, or you really never have.
I really haven't.
You make a fake account because it'll be like...
And the idea is to do what? To like creep?
Yeah. Well, my original, the first fake account I ever made was because, now I repent on this, is before I was in therapy. I've done a lot of self-help work. I don't even want to say the time frame, but I was really jealous of somebody. And like when you get jealous of someone, it doesn't, you know, it's like... Brain stops working, and it's all about me, not with them. In terms, you know, having a resentment of someone, it's like, I forget who said it, but it's like taking a poison and expecting it to hurt them. You know, like me being jealous of someone does no good to anybody, but I was jealous. Someone got something I really wanted, and I made a fake account. And when they were posting the promo, it was for a stand-up special on a network that we were both up for on something, made a fake account, and I went and I thumbs downed it.
Ooh.
I thumbs down any promo associated with it. Went thumbs down, thumbs down, thumbs down. And I was sitting on the porch, and my girlfriend at the time said, "What are you doing?" And I said, "I made about 8 fake accounts now so I could thumbs down all the promo for this thing that I didn't get of the person who did."
Just spite thumbs.
Spite thumbs, which is also, it's like, there's like thousands of thumbs up and thousands of thumbs down. Right, like my two fucking extra thumbs.
Didn't really mean anything.
And when you make a fake account, you have to make a fake email address. Like a YouTube, you have to make a fake YouTube. You have to get a picture off of the web of someone else.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And so I would do that and she would be like, "This is not healthy behavior."
Yeah, yeah.
And it's true. So that's one way to do it, to go hate. Like, because you don't want to have you popping up hating, but then you could be like, Doug Davidson, and then pops up and be like, "You're a bitch. You should go to a, you're not as good as Jesse McCartney." You know, whatever. You can say whatever you want.
Yeah.
So that's one way. And then I'll do another one where I'll just like, now I don't do that anymore because that is not productive at all. But now I'll make like a fake one just to like look at stuff I wouldn't look at.
I see. I guess it makes sense because when you look at like comments and somebody writes something pretty shitty on your comment section and then you click on it and they have like one follower and they follow zero people, you're like, "Oh, it's cool. I guess that's either a fake person or a bot, fake account or a bot, just out there hating for no reason."
Which definitely that person is not in a good place.
Yeah, definitely.
Like there's no way they're like going from yoga to therapy to like a well-rounded social life to then popping in and doing that. Are you good about not engaging with comments that make you upset?
Yeah. I just like decided one day I'm not, you know, I like an opportunity to be sort of have a comeback and be witty and snipe, and I'm really good at it. So like, don't, ooh, if you come for me, like, chances are you'll lose. But I decided like,
gloves are off.
I decided that like early on in the early stages of social media, I don't think anyone really knew how to react to those things. So, and initially I think your first reaction is to sort of defend yourself and be like, you know what I mean? But like, eventually I realized like, oh, it's just like somebody who's hurting and in a bad place and like, or jealous or upset or maybe, I don't know what they're going through.
So many things, right?
So I just decided to like breeze over it. Or even now I just like do the reverse psychology thing where I just hit them so hard with something kind or sweet, you know?
Totally.
And then it disarms them immediately.
Right.
But, luckily, like whoever is commenting on my page, I would say 99.9% of them, they're just all very positive people for the most part. I'm pretty lucky that way. I don't know why, but for the one troll, like I just like, why, you know, why give him the satisfaction?
Especially with something like music, like in comedy, I understand people having because a lot of times comics are saying like shorts, usually by nature of comedy, you have to have a target in what you're saying. Mm-hmm. So then someone might say like, "Hey, I disagree with that." It can elicit a pretty like reactionary response. Like people get pissed if they don't like someone's comedy, they're like, "I hate you," like quick or whatever it is. "You look like Ellen," whatever people get. But with music, who, for someone to be, get so mad in music, to me, that would seem even more odd because music is, it's a, I don't know, like to have, if to, if you don't like somebody's music, it seems like I would, it'd be very strange for then someone to be like, I just leave it crazy, nasty comments to me. It would even, it makes more sense leaving like mean stuff around comedy than music to me for some reason.
I think hate knows no, you know.
Yeah, it's not logical usually.
It's not specific to any one medium or profession. Like people who hate are going to hate whether you're a doctor, you know, a police officer, a comedian, or a singer. And like, you know, hate doesn't, you know, it's not specific to one profession, but yeah. So, okay. So so now I understand the fake accounts.
Oh, yeah. But that's a good sign for you that you, that it's like a, did you ever see that viral video where the woman asked about, she's like asking the guy if he's ever cheated and he's like, is it legal? And she's like, what? And he's like, no, cheating's illegal. Like I haven't done that before. And she was like, no, it's legal. And then he's like, oh no, I don't do that. And then she's like, that guy needs to be protected at all costs. So that reminded me of your reaction. Like
that's
fake
hilarious.
Account. Yeah.
I just like wouldn't have the time to put a new email address together.
As you shouldn't.
Like do all of the necessary things just to have a fake account. It seems like a lot of work.
But. Let me tell you something. I'm sure there was a million things I was supposed to be doing. And instead I'm pulling up, trying to come up with a backstory. Like I'm a culinary assistant from Detroit. Like, you know, whatever, just to go in and instead of taking the time to just improve myself where I could go and then submit something to get the thing, I'm going to do all this so I can go and go thumbs down. Like that's going to be the one that's going to get to them. You know what I mean?
I don't even like how many real accounts I have that are actually me. I've got like three accounts. I'm on three. And that's like already too many. I just want one place that I can go. Now I have to do all this shit on TikTok.
Yep.
Instagram, all the real, you know, shorts, like
Boogaloo.
All these things.
You heard of that one?
Which one?
Boogaloo. I made it up. Okay. I'm joking. Sorry.
I was like, great. I'm going to get a call. Like, you're not on Boogaloo yet? What the hell is Boogaloo?
That's like my biggest fear that someone's like says,
say, yeah, oh, I heard about it.
And then I go, like when Thread came out and someone was like, oh man, like da da da's going viral on Thread, they're doing this. And I was like, what is it? And they're like, they're not really, but it is a new thing. And I was like, oh my God, I can't do a new one.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. What I love about Shopify is basically how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. I know we use Shopify here at Betches, and honestly, anyone with any kind of business could really benefit from Shopify. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/betches, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/betches now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/betches.
All right, now it's time to ask Jesse anything. So these are specific questions tailored just for you.
Cool.
How did your time as a teen pop star impact your love life?
Well, I mean, like I said in the beginning, it was such a shock to the system. I don't think anyone, and still to this day, is really built to be ready for that kind of immediate attention, especially, you know, as a young guy who was into girls but didn't really necessarily have all the, like, know how to talk to them. And then all of a sudden you're singing these songs and young girls are sort of just like screaming when they see you and throwing themselves sort of at you, and you just don't really know how to handle that. It was complicated, and like I had my own insecurities. I was like, I remember when Beautiful Soul came out, like I was also like within 3-4 months, I just started immediately battling like acne and, you know, something that
are
like,
you serious?
Yeah, it was awful. And like,
where did that come? Do you think it was the stress?
I think universe. I think it was just puberty. Like, I think it was just like, damn that puberty.
The universe was like, you can't have it all right now. Yeah.
But so I still was like a little insecure with myself and growing through those teenage years and trying to figure out who I was as a young kid. And then had this added pressure of like these girls expecting so much from you. You know, it never was, I think I just really wanted to meet somebody who wanted to know me and wanted like this other thing, like this private thing, and like really be intimate and have like cool conversations that were outside of this other thing that was going on in my life, this, you know, elephant in the room. But yeah, I mean, I think it did affect me a little bit. I remember like having to go back to high school. Beautiful Soul had come out my junior year.
You had to go back in person?
And I went, and well, I wanted to like finish and graduate with my class. So senior year, I went back and graduated. But like there was a year period where Beautiful Soul had come out. Beautiful Soul was a worldwide hit.
Right.
And I was in every, like you said, I was in Morgan, what was her name?
Margo's
bedroom.
Wall, yes.
And like from junior year to senior year, there was like this shift.
Right.
Where like, no one knew me in high school, or maybe a few people did, to like everyone wanted to hang out.
Yeah, you go, okay, guys.
So it affected relationships in the sense that like other people were changing around me to sort of like befriend me, which I was so uncomfortable with, including girls, including like young girls. And
that's very hard to trust in that situation,
hard
too.
Hard to trust and hard to filter and have to distinguish what's what when you're that young and emotionally, you know, not totally mature.
That's very complicated, too, because it's like that is still you that they're responding to. So it's like they're responding to you, but also it's like they weren't, it's a different response than it was before this thing. That's a very, it's like, because it's like, it's hard to know what's real because that is then the reality, but also it's like, okay, if that's very like murky.
Yeah. And like kind of icky feeling. And like, you know, I remember there were like dudes in my school that I wouldn't say they were like mean, but like I looked for attention from them, like to be like included, you know, like I was always seeking their approval. And then the song came out and I was, and then all of a sudden I was like the man with them.
Right.
And it was like, I was like kind of mad about it because I knew why, but I also was like still wanted them to feel that way about
of
me.
Of course.
So that was complicated. But I guess, you know, it was probably the same for, you know, meeting girls, you know.
Did it feel really sudden? Because even though you had been like working on it, like doing the auditions and the acting, and then was it, because it was just like there was a moment when the song hit and then all of a sudden there was like a clear shift, like almost like a different look in people's eyes.
Yeah. I mean, Beautiful Soul just really changed everything.
Right.
You know, like it, you know, I was this young theatrical kid coming down to the city. I grew up in New York and I was doing Broadway shows, off-Broadway shows, and I was working in the theater and going to auditions for commercials and soap operas and doing all of these little things that so slowly were sort of building this snowball that's like starts at the top of the hill, is gently rolling down, and then at some point, like if there was a cliff and Beautiful Soul was the cliff, it's just like the snowball goes off the cliff and now I'm just like cruising down the mountain. And yeah, that's kind of what it felt like. Beautiful Soul was just like the shifting point where things went from like kind of successful to just like pandemonium. And
that makes sense. In your recent single, Make a Baby, you sing the lyric, I'm just going to read it. I'm not going to try to sing it. I wouldn't do that to anybody. It's all she wants to do. Got me on a schedule, always in the mood. When you've been in a relationship for a long time, is there a way to schedule sex without killing the romance?
Yeah, well, in this, you know, scheduling, I think, was also just like, you know, when I say that lyric, it's meant to, you know, it's because sometimes you have to schedule.
I like scheduling sex.
Schedule sex, but like specifically to start a family. Like it's right. An ovulation thing more than it is like, hey, do you have time at 3 o'clock? It wasn't that kind of lyric. It was more like, no, literally there's a window in order to get pregnant.
Right.
So, but yeah, I mean, it definitely does like, I mean, it's not like the sex. Listen, starting a family is not always the sexiest thing, and that's okay. Like, it doesn't have, you know, it, like, there's a difference between romance and then, like, this other thing, right? Like, sometimes you just have to be a little, you have to sort of separate the two.
Right.
And know that, like, for the greater good, you're waking up at 4 a.m.,
right.
You know, to perform, right? So it's
and how
like,
do you guys know when you got there's, it's like through apps and stuff?
Oh, they have like ovulation sticks. And okay. Like, you know, we can go into the doctor and kind of look and see what's going on. But yeah, so, but look, but then you also have to find time to be romantic and be sexy and, you know, and know that, like, hey, tonight it's going to be like this, you know,
right.
It's like, but yeah, they're two different things completely, I think.
How are you going to decide, do you think, definitively? Is there going to be, because I've been trying to think if I want to have kids, and I wish there was a definitive moment where it was like, just do it. Like now when I talk to, like if I interact with like a toddler or something, I'm almost waiting for them to break character and be like, yes, you could do this. But that obviously doesn't happen.
Right.
Is there going to be a moment, like, are you set on doing it, you think, with the baby, or are you still deciding?
Yeah, I mean, I think we both are super into the idea. The question is, like, one or two? Like,
right.
I feel like two would be max. I feel like once parents are outnumbered by children, it's
for
like,
sure.
Shit goes off the rails real fast, and I see it firsthand with,
same.
Like, friends. But I don't know. I feel like, A, I'd be a really good dad. I love kids. And my wife would be a really great mom. I feel like we're definitely fit for it. And we've got a great relationship. And we have a very similar moral compass. Like, we agree on a lot of the same things. So I think we'll be good at it. Was there a shifting point? I don't know. Maybe a few years ago. I mean, look, don't get me wrong. I'm still terrified. And
right,
I don't know
scary.
that ever goes away or ever should.
True.
You know, I think it's like there's a good, healthy sense of being scared, you know? But like that's like any good thing. I think that
anything you
happened,
care about.
Anything you care about. But, you know, I feel like, you know, I'm going to read the books and go on YouTube and like do all this
so much
research
YouTube.
And like get everyone's opinions
right.
And then like sort of form my own and... But I think you'd be great. I mean, you'd figure it out.
I would love
How
to
do
have
you
a,
feel about it?
I feel really scared about it now just because I feel scared of, I'm not sure what the exact fear point is, but I know like with my, okay, this is what my real fear would be. My fear would be with my travel schedule right now with like touring stuff. Like I'd be thinking, I'd be like, okay, say I'm doing some like really like Joe's Chuckle Hut out in the middle of nowhere, right?
Right.
So now I'll go do that, but, and happily.
Right.
Call me, but, but, I'm there this weekend, www.immwoman.com for tickets. But my fear would be, okay, if I have a kid and I'm looking at my little baby, and then I go, okay, I got to go to Joe's Chuckle Hut, and like, there's got to be other ways I should be advancing my career. Like, maybe I just shouldn't go do that, and then I don't go do that, and then I don't go do that, because I want to be there for the kid.
And they, and just so I know, they don't have daycare at Joe's Chuckle Hut?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
And then so then I would be like resenting the kid because my career didn't move along, which I know isn't the right way to do it at all. So I guess I would just be afraid of like figuring out balancing career stuff with the kid. But I know so many people that do it. And I think that maybe is an irrational fear.
No, it's not. And you're afraid of sacrifice in a certain way.
I'm afraid of sacrifice, but right. I'm being cognitive of it because I just don't want to set it up so I'm like resenting. Like I would want to be there to have like consistency and like do all the things with the kid. I know my girlfriend's mom would help too, or I don't know. And also I'm very afraid of like not getting enough sleep.
Oh, well, yeah,
because that
sure.
fucks you up.
Totally. Sleep, I mean, that you're just going to have to commit to.
That's
like,
you got to commit
to. That's over, right? So like that, you're just going to have to like that mark that as a loss. Though. But I feel like I connect with you on the schedule thing and the touring thing and traveling, like having to sacrifice career stuff for the kids stuff. That kind of sucks in my head, like, and intellectually I understand that. But I feel like once the kid gets here, I'll be like, yeah, fuck that tour, you know, or just like, let's, let's postpone, or let's bring the kid with me. I feel like there's, you know, from everyone I talk to in the industry that has done this, they find a way.
They do find a way.
They have a, you know, a partner usually that is really good at helping, or, you know, a mother-in-law or father-in-law or somebody that's good, that wants to help. But I hear you, like, having to like not tour or do something that I really have always wanted to do or love doing because of the kid. It sounds selfish, but like, you know, it's all we know, right?
And it's one, and there's a certain point of like being aware of what's selfish to then protect the kid too. And then to not have like, just trying to bring them into the most healthy, balanced place possible. Yep. What would you do if your kid liked a totally different type of music than you liked? Like say they liked, I don't know if there's any type of music you hate, but say they came out and they're like, I only listen to Korn. Mm. I don't give a fuck about pop music.
I like Korn, actually.
Okay. What's it, or some, I like Korn too,
but
you know what I'm saying? Like, what if they're like, they're in their
room. Just like death metal or just some hair. Yeah.
All you hear is like, And you're like, what the fuck is that? And they're like, Dad, I'm singing. And you're like, that's not music.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like at least for growing up for me, like you kind of like what your parents like. I mean, I did. I mean, eventually, like I guess as a teenager, I did start branching out and finding my own stuff. And I do remember I do remember actually distinctly my dad being like, "What is this shit?" You know. But I don't know. I
about
guess
pop music.
It'll be a bummer. What was I listening to that he hated? No, it was probably like a Jay-Z album anything rap. You know.
Right.
Men born in their 50s and in 60s, like my father, like, what is this rap? You know,
totally.
Not super into rap. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I guess I would just remember that with my dad, too. Yeah, I mean, I'd either break their records or put them up for adoption, I guess. Just kick them out. You know?
Out in the street.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Have you ever written a song about an ex? And if so, did the ex confront you about it?
I have written a song about an ex. It wasn't like a really confrontational thing, but it like she did acknowledge it.
Mm.
She was like, I heard the song, by the way. And I was like, cool. Knew you would.
Right. Thank you. Please rate and review.
That's why I wrote it. But
she wasn't upset by it?
It wasn't like hateful. It was just sort of like a realistic thing, you know?
Right.
But yeah, you know.
Fair.
Don't mess with songwriters, I guess, in a relationship.
True.
Or comedians.
It's true. I'll try to be, you got to be careful with that. I'll try to be really careful with that too. Or like, I used to think on like podcasts or radio stuff that the person wouldn't hear it.
Right.
And I was in a relationship once where she was like, no, I don't listen to anything that like you put it. I don't know why I believed this. And I was like, perfect. And then obviously that was not the case.
Was she pissed?
It was someone, this is a while ago, it was someone I really liked her. Like I was like going on and on about, we were just dating, but I really liked her. And then we would be talking and I'd be like, no, I want to keep it casual too. And she'd be like, really? And then she like played something on the podcast where I was like, oh man, like I think she's the one or something. And I was like, that was a long time ago. She's like, you said that like last week. And I was like, no, I didn't. But it's like hit play and then saying it. So I try never to say something that then someone can't, if they don't have a platform to respond, I try to just not do that.
That seems fair.
Yeah. Or like, I'm not allowed to talk about this one thing that I want to say now, but I'm not going to let my intrusive thoughts win.
Okay. Good for you.
One time I gave someone hemorrhoids. And I'm not allowed to talk about it because I was doing butt stuff too intensely. And so like it was on me. Like we were doing butt stuff and then I gave a hemorrhoid and then I like haven't done any butt stuff again since then. And they're like, don't talk about it on air because it's like my friends listen, but I'm not even saying who it was. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Wow. That it's good you're not mentioning her name.
Which is totally like fair to not want people to know about that. Is there a different thought process behind writing a song for someone else versus writing for yourself, especially if the other person is a woman?
Yeah, for sure. First of all, a lot of the songs that I've placed, for whatever reason, have just been songs that actually were intended for my project.
Sure. And that makes total sense.
Yeah. And they just got picked up by a female artist. Hmm. When you're writing for a woman with like intention, right, that you know you're writing for a project, you sort of have to get into their mind frame, right? If you're, let's say you're writing a song for like a teenage pop star girl, the obvious one would be like you're saying things like, boy, I love you, or boy, right. You know, rather than writing a, you know, the other version. But I think it's hard. Like it's harder, much harder for me to get into the mindset of like what women are thinking.
Sure.
And so I don't do it that often, to be honest. I mean, I've written, I don't know, maybe like a dozen songs from the perspective of a woman. But yeah, you definitely have to shift and sort of like think about all the things that women hate about men.
Right.
You know, they hate us being late, or they hate us not listening, or yes, they hate all these things. And then try to, you know,
that's probably a really good exercise. Aside
and like, just, yeah, it is a good exercise. There are times, there's both, right? Because I think there's songs, like I wrote a song called Bleeding Love for Leona, yes, Lewis. And I feel like that song is one of those records that can be sung by either a man or a woman.
Right. It transcends.
It transcends. Yeah. And, but obviously, like, if you want to write a boy, I hate you kind of record, right, you have to, you know, have to do it from a girl's perspective.
When you wrote that song, it was originally for you, though, right?
It was, yeah.
And then, so then it, like, shifted over. Mm-hmm. So that one, that is a type of song, too, that really does, like, transcend any type, because it's, like, that's love. So, like, yeah, that's, like...
It was gender neutral. Like, right, it didn't have any sort of... It was just about like pure, like at, like the love at its absolute core, mm-hmm, that knows no gender. And I think those are the greatest hit records, and some of the biggest ballads is a song that women want to sing, men want, right, to sing, and everyone in between, you know, it's those are the most special records. When
absolutely,
you can achieve that.
That's a tribute to the writing with that too.
Yeah. I mean, we just got really lucky. You know, we had Ryan and I, you know, we almost didn't show up to the studio that day.
Is it was Ryan's like, your writing partner?
No, Ryan Tedder is the lead singer of One Republic. And
oh, yes.
I wrote that with him, and it was like pouring rain that day in Los Angeles, which in LA is like a huge thing, right?
Right.
Like no one drives anywhere.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, it's,
yes,
a half an inch of rain, right, and no one wants to go to work. So we were those people. We're like, ah, it's raining. Should we come in? Or he's,
right,
like, you know what? He's like, I'm already halfway there. Like, let's just do it. And we went in and we wrote this thing, and it was,
wow,
it was a special day. But yeah, I mean, I feel like the biggest songs and the best music can be appreciated by every gender, every audience.
Absolutely. Have you received a piece of advice that turned out to be completely wrong?
Oh, that's a great question. Piece of advice that turned out to be...
I can't even imagine the type of people giving you advice when you first start like touring at your age or something.
Yeah. I would say any press is good press. I would say just to keep it in entertainment. Like there are certain people that do feel that way probably, but I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think that's true.
I agree. I think that is also not true.
And that's like terrible advice to like give a 20-year-old kid.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, hey, just do whatever you want, basically.
Right.
Is what you're saying?
Totally.
And that's kind of not cool. Like, you know, like you gotta keep people accountable. I didn't like being told that because I remember I was like 20 years old and I had a house in Los Angeles and I was like partying my face off, and there was like a year period where I was like having parties at the house, you know, as every 19, 20 year old college kid would.
Absolutely.
Do. And I like pissed off my neighbors pretty good.
Sure.
And I still feel bad about that. Like I'm still like kind of because like they were such nice people. But, and then it got picked up by like TMZ, and it was like, I remember like,
shit,
everyone talking about like this story and like me, you know, and that people had coming over. And like, I remember someone saying like, hey man, it's press. Like it's press.
Right.
And I just remember being like, you gross person. Like,
yeah,
you know,
I'm not excited,
but
press, I'm not going to sign this.
Yeah, I was press, but I was like, I was being a bad neighbor.
Right.
Like, it's like, anyway.
How old were the people that lived next to you? Was like a family?
No, there was like, there was an older, like retired couple.
Oh no.
Yeah. Like older retired couple next
Fuck.
Next to me. I know it was pretty shitty, but you know,
I so get the annoyance now too when people like there was this, I forget when it was a couple months, maybe it was longer than that, but some kids were like singing on a rooftop on a Sunday night at like maybe around midnight, but really loud, and it was keeping me up. And I was so pissed by it. But I used to have house parties at my mom's house.
You didn't go over there and sing with them?
Oh no. I got so upset. They weren't just singing. They were trying to like do like a, they were like really blasting music. It was fucking loud. And it was Sunday and I had to fly out really early and I got so upset by it.
Yeah.
I joined the block association on my block because I was so pissed. But it's like, I used to have parties at my mom's house all the time.
Yeah.
So, but now then you get it where you're like, what the, like don't mess up my circadian rhythm.
Yeah, I know.
But I'm sure they understood.
Yeah, they
understood.
Yeah,
they lived in Hollywood.
They did
so.
For a time, and then they literally were like, you need to leave this neighborhood, which I did. I was like, you know what? You're right. I need to go start over.
Fair. Yeah, I'm going to join a new place. What's your favorite way to spend a day off besides pottery and hiking?
Yeah. My, how things have changed.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Talking about raging in my house. That really is kind of it. I mean, I love to sleep in on like on a day off. Like I love a good sleep in and like, you know, that kind of sleep where you don't, there's no alarm set and you just kind of wake up on your own and you're like, oh, you know what I mean? And you just kind of like.
With kids, that's going to be tough.
Definitely go away for sure.
Please. I hope I don't want to plant that in your, where you're like, you know, I wanted to have kids. And then I talked to this one little motherfucker and your wife was like, who? What?
No. She'd find you. I think my favorite thing to do when I'm day off is like, I do enjoy like watching sports. I'm a sports fan.
What kind of sports?
I love going to games. I love football. I love baseball. I love golf too. Mm. I just like recently really started getting into watching golf, which is like super old man vibes, but it's relaxing
it
for
is,
me.
I get it. Yeah.
So, and I love to cook. So I'm like, if I have like a couple days off, like I'll go to the market and like buy a bunch of like Italian meats and pastas and all these things and get in the kitchen and be like, hey, we're eating tonight. And, you know.
Cooking is so fun too when you're used to traveling all the time to then get to cook in your freaking kitchen.
I know, it's the best.
It's the best. It's the that best. Is like.
Very
that,
cathartic.
Very cathartic. Yeah.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24/7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Now we have a rapid fire round. It's called Who, What, Where, When, How. So just the first thing that pops to your mind. Who do men want to be compared to?
Their father.
Definitely. I could see that.
It's a heavy one.
It is. It's interesting too because it's like, and then the dad wants to be compared to that dad, and it just goes like up and up and up.
Yep.
And someone's relationship with their dad then so affects how they probably have their relationship with their kids. And
I think young men are always stacking themselves up against their dad.
Mm.
I mean, it's a little bit of a generalization, but psychologically, I think it makes sense.
For sure. What do men think about while they fall asleep?
Oh, man. Depends on the night, I guess. But, for me, it's pizza.
I love pizza. I fucking love pizza. I'll think about that sometimes when I fall asleep, too. Yeah. Yep. It makes me, like, I was doing this, like, a real, like, fitness, like, overhaul.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was really doing a cut, I would look at, like, pizza all the time before I'd fall asleep.
Yeah, it's the best.
Yeah. And then when I stopped doing the cut, I would eat pizza all the time before I'd fall asleep. Yeah.
Yep.
It's just a happy food. It's almost suspicious how good cheese tastes versus cold cheese is delicious, but once you melt it, it's almost suspicious how incredible it is.
There was like a study done, and I don't know the specifics, but where like the actual effects that cheese has on the brain, like eating any kind of cheese, and that like it releases all these endorphins and serotonin and Yeah, like it has a it has a physical reaction on on your happy sensors in your body, on all the happy things that happen in your body. It does. Dude, if you bring a large cheese pizza over to my house, my wife is literally like, if I know I messed up and I bring her home like a large cheese pizza that's hot.
Right. Fuck flowers.
She's like, yeah, exactly. Yep. She's like, okay.
You know, fine. Like, it's not so bad. Like, or you bring over a pizza and she doesn't know you fucked up yet. And she's like,
right. What's going on?
Right.
What did you do?
Where do men devote the most energy?
For me right now, everyone's different. I mean, it's such a general question, but right. I think for me right now, I'm devoting the most energy into my, like, building a family with my wife. Like, that is, like, the music thing is great, and I'm touring, and I'm doing all these things, but, like, really, like, what's distracting me most of the time is just, like, getting this, you know, starting this thing, this new chapter in our life, and, like, when we can do it, and, like, the tour seems like, actually, as much as I love touring and seeing all the fans and doing it, seems like a little bit of, like, a distraction for the first time,
for sure.
It's like actually interrupting this other thing where everything else used to interrupt the music.
Right.
And now, like, I've felt that shift. So for me, the most energy right now and time spent is to this thing.
And it's interesting too with, like, because there can be that's where the energy is going, but then also you're still spending an extreme amount of time on something else too. But it could be like building up for then, like, that one feeds into the other too, because doing something like a giant tour and doing like a beautiful new album, like, then all like feeds into, it's like kind of like the snowball of life versus the snowball of a career. It's like building it towards then what, like, the place of creating the family.
Yep.
As scary as that is. When do men need help but are too proud to ask?
Directions.
Oh yeah, fucking directions.
I mean, it's classic, but it's kind of true.
Yeah, my dad still won't ask for them.
Yeah, I mean, we have like all the apps now and stuff, so I feel like for some reason it's acceptable for, like, you know, in modern times for like us to pull out the app. But like, even like if I'm like walking somewhere and like I don't know where I'm kind of going, like if it's at a golf course, or if I'm at a mall I've never been to or something with my wife, and she's like, why don't we just stop at the map thing and look?
Oh, no.
And I'm like, no, I know where this is. It's like there, it's always usually around this corner, or or I've been there once before, and she's like, let's type it in and get the map. Well, it'll say you are here, and we'll go, no, I got it. And then we do four laps around the mall.
Right. She's like, do you got it?
Yeah.
Whenever someone says it's usually around this corner too, that might not be, and that's usually, I got a feeling it's around, around here, around there.
This
around
feels
here.
Right.
This feels good. Yeah, like, yeah. My dad won't even ask for directions if, like, he won't even put the map could be saying one thing and he will override what he thinks the map is, even though the map is literally a GPS.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll be like, nah, I know another way. It's not the right way.
I think also too, like, being challenged on things that are generally considered masculine things, right? Like fixing the water heater in my house, or like,
oh God,
doing tinkering with something that my wife is actually really good with, that kind of stuff. She's very, she's really good with her hands, and she's good at like tinkering and doing things like that.
My girlfriend's good at assembling stuff too.
So sometimes I'll be like, I'm gonna fix the heater, right? And then I'll go down there to the garage and I'll go and like fix the heater, and then I can just like feel her like start to come in, like on my shoulder. And she's like, I don't think that goes like that or goes there. And I'm like, I got this.
Yeah, I got it.
Like, I can see it. I know how to do it. And then of course, like, I'll like throw in the towel, be pissed. I'll like be breaking screwdrivers, and she'll come in. She'll be like, whoop. And it'll perfect. So yeah, just general, like, being given directions in general, or like being told how to do something, I feel like that's a struggle.
You want to know how to fix that. There's something about fixing the heater that would be so satisfying too.
Yeah.
And then,
like, and like feel like you're, you know, you're taking care, you know, like you're head of security.
Yes.
You know?
Providing. Yeah. I got it. I got the lay. I call it sometimes. I know this is really fucked up. I'll say master of the domain.
Master of the domain.
I want to be the master of the domain. And this, and then like my girlfriend, like, well, first of all, like, that's not even like the fucking water heater over there. So like, whatever you've been doing, like, you just turn on the AC. Congratulations.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
yeah.
How do men work through their feelings?
I mean, I can tell you for me, I'm not you know, ashamed of this, but like I struggle with it. Like I compartmentalize for a little too long.
That's so interesting to me because you are able to express feelings so well in your music.
Thanks. So I mean, it's probably the only healthy way of communicating my feelings, but it's usually later on and I have
There's like a delay. It's not a real time.
Yeah.
It happens and then you're not processing it in real. Yeah, that makes sense.
Not processing in real time. And then you're like, I'm going to save this, you know,
right.
I'm going to save this for that big, you know, for the record.
Yeah, it's also commodifying the feeling. You have that with when you do any type of like comedy too, like anything that's like funny too or odd, where in the past it just used to be in the moment, but now you're like looking at it like, ooh, I gotta this and that with it. So your takes
currency,
you out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, currency.
So I'm working on that and I have to be better at it. But I think like for me, you know, I think I've gotten to a place that's really cool where I can discuss this stuff with my wife, but usually it's generally after her having to pry it out of me or say like, hey, you're getting really frustrated a lot and I can tell some shit's going on. So like, let's get through this.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I think therapy is probably very good for most people.
For sure.
Yeah. So for me, it's those things and writing for sure. But yeah, not holding on to stuff, I think, is like probably the best way to work through your feelings. You know, it's just like you don't want to get to a point where it like builds and then you explode on something stupid like the water heater.
Right.
Or you know, or God forbid you scream at somebody you love or, you know, because you're but, you know.
Where it's like, okay, this might not be about this. Like,
yeah.
You're flipping out about something.
Exactly.
Yeah, like you're like unloading the dishwasher.
Who hurt you?
Exactly. And they're like, are you really that upset about this? Or did I forget your birthday or something like that?
Yeah.
Was there ever a point where you wanted to write like an angry song and you felt like you couldn't? Because did you ever feel confined to pop when you were coming up?
There's definitely things like I didn't say that I wanted to say for the sake of that person or that person's feelings, or just because like my audience, I don't think could handle it, you know, but I think, it would be super fun and I've never done it to like write some shit like that, but as a ghostwriter, you know?
So that's like making a fake YouTube account, like a version of that.
Exactly.
Some anonymity.
You're trying to pull me into your world.
No. I got off the game on that too. I had to, I deleted the accounts. Like I have one now, but I'll only do it where I'll go and like some stuff that I'm trying to get it started.
Yeah.
That's
good.
That's the only one.
But it is kind of like that.
Yeah,
though.
It's
You, as a ghostwriter, you kind of like get to write without, you know, the accountability of it.
Also without the context, because I think someone might then be putting it through your lens, but you're like, no, I want this song to stand on its own too. So that would also.
Yeah.
I respect being like, okay, this maybe wouldn't be the right thing for my audience. Because it's like, okay, well, we have an ongoing conversation and I love this conversation as part of our relationship. So I don't actually, it's like, I respect tailoring something to it, the crowd. It's like kind of like the net positive of the conversation we currently have doesn't necessarily, I don't know if I want to infringe on that.
Yeah.
And it's great that over the years, like what a beautiful thing that they've gotten to see you produce such a big body of work.
Thanks.
It's a big body of work.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
I've been working at it a while.
Not an easy thing to have a long time in, too.
Well, I appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing the show. And where can people find you?
Oh, man. You can find me everywhere, I guess. All of my three accounts, TikTok, Instagram, all, you know.
Boogaloo or whatever I said it was.
Toot Boogaloo. And then all my fake accounts, right?
And all fake accounts.
But
if I start getting all these thumbs down from some mysterious accounts, I'm like, he made this account.
It's Jesse.
It's him. Oh my God, I'm getting trolled.
Yeah, and come see me on tour. I'll be traveling for the next like 6 weeks around the U.S., doing a big U.S. tour starting April 12th through the end of May. So
fun.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to the show. Please DM me at Emma Willman on Instagram. Email your questions to AMA@betches.com for our next guest or leave us a voicemail at 201-754-8351. I'll talk to you next week when we Ask Men Anything. Ask Men Anything is produced and edited by Rebecca Steinberg. Guest booking by Anna Zagzag. Send your emails to AMA@betches.com.
Betches.